Tell us a little bit about how you got involved working with NASA and what you were doing for them.
Well, I worked at a switching company. Later, I had my own company, but we did systems that handled ground signals from telemetry. In other words, spacecraft telemetry and shuttle telemetry and that kind of thing. And the one of the systems put in August of, I believe it was 85, down at Pad B, which is where Challenger launched from several months later, was to measure launch pad stresses. So that's what the function of it was.
Mm-hmm.
60 signals coming into the switch and going to 40 channels of analog to digital conversion in computers. The system's installed inside the launch pad complex. What's pretty surprising, you never see this on television, is that there's basically a two-story, very long building. The halls are probably a couple hundred, 300 feet long, roughly, and each floor. There are rooms off each one, and there's people actually working the pad every day. There's break rooms and offices and so forth. And in one particular room up on the second floor is where the switching system resided. And the computers for doing the measurements and so forth. So, that it's kind of a strange place because the pad is hit by lightning several times a month. Being the tallest structure in many miles, I think the vehicle assembly building about 4 miles away is probably the other tallest structure there. And so there's grounding wires on the railings on the stairs. It's all concrete, but the stair treads, I have a metal stair tread, on each step, and each one of those is individually grounded. I mean, they just grounded everything. And but anyway, getting back to that, the measurement system for Challenger was disabled the morning of the launch. And they know who disabled it.
Intentionally disabled?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
After the place was closed up, a engineer from a certain aerospace company went in and changed the settings on the equipment and basically took it offline so it couldn't be controlled.
And I want to hear more. We got some music here. Folks, we'll come right back. More from our guest, Ted Tweetmeyer, more Frankly Speaking Radio when we return. Good morning, my friends, and welcome back. You are listening to Wednesday's edition of Frankly Speaking Radio. I'm your host, Frank Whale, and glad to have you with us here today. Our guest in this segment, Ted Tweetmeyer, is with us. We'll bring up our other guest here in a second. Ted, welcome back. You were just talking about the switching system for the Challenger. Was it for the launch, I presume?
Yes, it's known as the pad measurement system.
Okay.
It's the interesting nickname of PMS.
And it was intentionally disabled, thereby affecting the telemetry of the shuttle.
Yeah.
Is that the gist of it then?
It was telemetry of the launch pad conditions and stresses and some other conditions, and it just totally disabled it completely from the launch command center, so they 4 miles away they couldn't record any data. But none of this ever showed up in their report, which I found quite interesting. Now, how do I know all this? It's because I received a phone call from the Cape shortly after the accident happened. And at the time, I didn't have the frame of mind I have now of questioning things. I just said, I was very concerned because this was a fully redundant system, which means it had backup power supplies and the system would remain configured without power and everything else. And I was concerned about product reliability because we had just delivered this.
Yes.
So I said, I want to know. All they knew is that they lost the data the day of the accident.
Mm-hmm.
So I told the guy down there, I said, I want to know what happened. I said, promise me to let me know. I said, I promise I will. a week later, almost to the day, he called me back to tell me the news of what happened. And he's telling me in a low voice, and I think he was even a little bit scared about it. And I was watched and monitored for years after that. And last night was kind of a fun thing. Yesterday, a little after 5 o'clock, a black chopper went overhead, and for the first time since I've had ADSL for 5 years, it went out. The carrier was gone, and the phone company had to effect the repair somewhere. So I was wondering, actually, if I'd be able to talk to you this morning.
I'm glad we were able to pull that off. In your opinion, was that... Now, you installed that switch, right?
And yeah.
You were telling me that it couldn't be bumped, it couldn't be accidentally done, tampered with. It had to be... It was absolutely intentional. Do you think that was done to cover up the actual situation, and therefore potentially making the case that the Challenger explosion was not an accident?
Well, I was the project manager for the project, and I insisted on a aircraft-style switch, which was put in, and it's where you have to lift a transparent cover to press it. It has a lighted upper and lower half on the button to tell you which position it's in. And because I was concerned about it being bumped by someone backing into it or something in the aisle where the equipment was. And I think it was most likely to cover up pad conditions, because as we know, there was a big argument over temperatures and the Thiokol was being pressed by NASA to say, tell us we should launch, and that whole business went on. So I think they're trying to cover their tracks.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, that's some amazing stuff. I want to bring up my other guest here, because I think you guys will have a lot to feed off of each other. Steve from Florida. I don't know, Steve, your background, and I'm not asking you to tell any more than you'd like to, but go ahead and give Ted a little insight there, if you would.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much for sticking with us here.
Hey, you got me zooming. I drank a cup of coffee, and I have a slender tube of Nicotonic refreshment here, and I'm zooming now.
Outstanding, my friend.
I guess it's sort of brief, man. I work for Rocketdyne. I'm sure your guest is aware who Rocketdyne is. I'm sorry?
Ted,
I hear you now. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I just want to make sure we're all in here, right?
Oh, yeah.
Check, check, check.
We're all here.
I work for Rocketdyne in the shuttle program.
Okay.
Where would you like me to go from there?
A little bit on the information that you had called into the show with and things we had talked about in regards to Columbia, I guess it would be.
Well, I'd like to ask a question. I understand what he means with the pad conditions, but the Challenger report, matter of fact, I just whipped it out here a few minutes ago when you started talking about it, the Presidential Commission report on the Challenger accident.
Uh-huh.
And I'm aware of the problem. Okay, I guess what I'm trying to get at is what anomalies do you see with these shuttle accidents with the Challenger, I guess?
Okay, take a look at the table of contents on that report.
Okay.
Which is, essentially a list of clickable links. You on the KSC web server?
Oh, no, I have the actual report in my hand. It's a paper.
Oh, okay.
Paperback. Volume 1, Volume 2. Which volume do I have here? I'm not even sure which volume. Does it say? Okay, well, I have the table of contents here. I'm looking at it.
Pre-launch operations. This would be something, close between pre-launch and launch operations. I think you'd agree with that.
Pre-launch operations.
Because during pre-launch, they would have found they lost telemetry, they would lose telemetry from the pad system, the measurement system. So,
the vehicle sends the, through S-band, I believe the S-band antenna is where they get the telemetry from the vehicle during the ascent, correct?
No, this is not vehicle telemetry. This is from the pad measurement system.
So you
it's
think
hardwired.
Do you think they were just trying to hide the temperatures on the pad during that morning's launch?
Well, let me put it to you this way, okay? The report has just one line in it. The report I read online on the KSC web server, it said, no evidence of sabotage was found. However, someone going in there, and they knew who it was, because as you probably know, you know, the launch pads have their own guardhouse around them. You know, they have their own access.
Yeah, I'm well aware of that.
Yeah, and so they knew exactly who it was. Hmm. And but this never showed up in the report. They didn't want this to appear in there. But this guy went in there and disabled the switch and then some other equipment. I wasn't told the names of the other equipment, but they said he did change the settings on a number of things. And then he left.
My research of the Challenger appeared to be sort of an up-and-up accident, though. Would you agree? Followed the O-ring problem on the SRBs?
Well, the word I got from another source, and this is a very, very reliable person, was that they decided that that was going to launch no matter what. Now, I don't know the reason for that.
Well,
that was the word. They said that it came from the top, that that vehicle was going up that day no matter what the conditions or what the situation was.
That is true. They were in a rush. They had already missed three opportunities due to problems.
Yeah.
And they were in a rush to get that off the ground because they had the teacher in space thing with the Krista McAuliffe.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they had some reason to get that off the ground. I do remember that. It was a very cold day. Morton Feichel did recommend to not launch. They didn't think the O-ring pressures and the joints of the O-rings would withstand it. And according to the accident report and even the evidence that I've seen, you can see burn through the left SRB. And that burn through created what almost like a blowtorch that hit the strut that holds the bottom to the ET, the external tank.
Uh-huh.
And then the top of the solid rocket booster came into the top of the tank, which burst the tank open. And that's where you got was the explosion.
Right.
Which technically broke the shuttle into five main pieces. You had the crew compartment front end, you had the payload bay area, the two wings, and then the aft section with the main engines in it, which then it hit the water in that manner. They found the pieces, you know, of course, spread out. The main small pieces were all the external tank. The solid rocket boosters were exploded by the range officer. They exploded the external, the SRBs. Yeah, excuse me, I'm almost on 24 hours of being up, so I'm stumbling over my words here.
But, I'm doing fine.
That appears to be they appear to actually definitely be a O-ring problem with the solid rocket boosters. What I'm getting, in other words, I can't find any evidence they shot it down or sabotaged it or anything.
Right. Well, what he's saying is that I guess from what I'm hearing is that the information collection was sabotaged to I guess play up the plausible deniability angle. That's how it sounds to me. Ted, would you agree with that then? Because they had suspected that maybe because they were going to go. Regardless of recommendations, it was going to happen. They said, you know what, let's just go ahead and remove this element of information in case it comes into question.
Well, it does seem to be that way.
That's how it sounds, yeah.
You know, and the curious thing is the SRBs were found to be quite a bit out around. And if something happened to the launch sequencer, you know, and the explosive hold-down bolts weren't released, you know, quick enough. You have 1.2 million pounds of thrust.
Stress on the joints.
Huh?
Stress on the joints.
Yeah. And, but because all these accelerometers and strain gauges and temp sensors were, that data was missing, you know, that removes a written record, essentially a traceable record of what happened during that few seconds that the sequencer runs. So, you know, that... Now, here's the interesting thing, is when I read that report, I read it about 5 years after it was written and posted on their server. They said that the more work still needed to be done to characterize the explosive bolts. I thought that was interesting, you know, that all those years later, one of the most critical items in the space program are explosive bolts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they still had not done the necessary science on those.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
They still use them.
Yeah. Lots of them.
Yeah. Well, they even use them for the, you know, Delta rockets and all that over on the Canaveral side, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think they went from using clamps to bolts, I think.
Well, and they actually have solid charges in them that release them.
Right. Well, I mean, they used to use these huge clamps that cantilevered back, you know?
Yeah, that was the Apollo, the Saturn. They use those.
Yeah.
But the shuttle uses a different type of clamps for the solids.
Mm-hmm.
You have the SRB main ignition first, and then when the SRBs go, it blows the bolts, and then, of course, you're leaving the pad then.
Actually, Yeah, I understand. Actually, they light the shuttle engines first.
Yes.
Because those they can shut down, but not the other ones.
Yeah, well, once the solids go, you're going somewhere, and you have to go for the burn.
Something's going to happen, yeah.
Well, another point on Challenger, it was only about 20 seconds shy of losing the SRBs. If the vehicle could have kept its, you know, in other words, another 20 seconds, it would have ejected the SRBs, and the vehicle probably would have never had the problem that it had, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That is interesting how close they came to really getting out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Steve, when you called in, we were talking about the shuttle program and about the things that people had seen. And, Ted, I know you're up on this, too. This blue lightning type of thing. When Columbia was coming back, I guess upon reentry, now the official story is that a piece of foam had broken a tile, and as a result of that, the heat got inside the wing and caused the shell to explode. It seems to me that it's a foolish argument. I mean, common sense would indicate that doesn't really ring true. I mean, you'd think that a spacecraft that's been in use for, I don't know, probably about 30 years or so at this point, not quite.
20,
okay. You would think that this problem would have come up before, the issue would have come up before, and so on and so forth. So tell us a little bit about what, you know, the word on the street is amongst the insiders there, Steve, people you've interacted with about Columbia.
Well, most of the technicians, which are the hands-on people, the engineers wear the ties and hang out on the other side of the complex. But I'd say it's hard to really judge how many of us, but a lot of them don't. Bottom line is, not very many people believe that this lithium foam took out the reinforced carbon-carbon.
Right.
Now, of course, we all know ballistics. You know, you can get a piece of water going fast enough, will go through steel if you need to.
Yeah.
But this doesn't really make any sense, the report. If this vehicle took this hole in the leading edge of the reinforced carbon-carbon, somewhere between panel 8 and, I think, 13 on the leading edge of the wing, there's no way this vehicle would have made its orbit. Plus, you'd see in the telemetry, you would see a drag coefficiency on the left side of the vehicle, and you'd have the inertial measurement units would try to make up for it. You'd see the verniers kicking in a little bit, trying to, because when it does the ascent, it shoots for position in the sky, is the best way to put it. The inertial measurement unit is it plots stars. That's the best way I can explain it. I'm not really in that category. I work on the engines and install them and maintain them till vehicle's off the ground. So bottom line is, it just doesn't make any sense, and a lot of people don't buy that. In reference to what is called the purple lightning phenomena,
yes,
they sent an astronaut out to California to this astronomer guy who took these pictures. The pictures were brought back to Houston. A few people saw them, and they were locked down under national security, and no one else has been able to see them since. Now, from my theory, and a few other people who go along with it, I think Raytheon or someone in San Diego has their laser thing that they do there with their lasers. And one of my friends at the physicist says it would be a plasma laser, possibly, because they put out that pinkish, purplish color.
Right.
And they could direct this and technically just burn a hole, a small little hole. That's all you would need, and the aerodynamics would take the rest, because technically the Columbia did not explode. When it lost the wingtip, it just went into a violent roll, because your aerodynamics went away.
Oh, I see.
So, and, of course, the centrifugal force just broke the vehicle into, you know, live bunches of pieces then, you know. And, of course, your onboard tanks, you have the hydrogen and the Loctite for the orbital maneuvering systems. Those all explode. Things